Tea. It's time now for Opera on Three, as we join listeners worldwide for the last in this season's Operas from the Met.
We are live at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City. I'm Mary Jo Heath. Today, on our final Saturday matinee broadcast of the season, we have Charles Gounod's sublime retelling of the world's most famous love story, Romeo et Juliet. Two dynamic American singers, soprano Eileen Perez and tenor Charles Castronovo, star as the young lovers whose families are at war. On the podium, Plácido Domingo conducts this supremely romantic score. During intermission, we'll go backstage and talk with our stars, and as the season wraps up, we'll chat with Met General Manager Peter Gelb. Stay with us.
And we'll be rejoining New York in a moment after their short advertising break. The Metropolitan Opera broadcast season is supported by Toll Brothers, the Annenberg Foundation, the Neubauer Family Foundation, and the Vincent A. Stabile Endowment for Broadcast Media, and broadcast here through an arrangement with the European Broadcasting Union. Now let's return to New York for Gounod's Romeo et Juliet.
I'm Mary Jo Heath, and with me is our commentator, Ira Siff. Ira, it's hard to believe, but here we are at the end of the broadcast season.
You know, Mary Jo, after enjoying so many kinds of operas, there's something poetic about finishing with a romance like Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, and the return of a pair of artists who we heard earlier in the season, but in separate broadcasts.
Yes, Eileen Perez was so memorable as Massenet's Thais, and Charles Castronovo was a heroic Tamino in The Magic Flute.
Yeah, and then there's Plácido Domingo. Not only has he sung Romeo at the Met, he's conducted it here almost 30 times. Several operas are based on this classic tragedy, but Gounod's is the most popular.
Well, generally the libretto follows Shakespeare, but it really zeroes in on the two lovers, and that allowed Gounod to give them four highly romantic love duets.
Well, let's talk through the music and the story. The opera opens with a plaintive choral prologue about the ancient feud between the Capulets and Montagues and their two children who pay for that hatred with their lives.
Well, the strings introduce a beautiful love theme that's taken over by the full orchestra. It reappears in various forms throughout the opera.
And then we move to a masked ball at the Capulet Palace. A lively mazurka kicks things off. Juliet's cousin Tybalt is singing her praises to a potential suitor, Count Paris, when she enters with her father.
Juliet's excitement bursts out in a brief florid solo as she compares her soul to a bird taking flight.
Some Montagues, led by Mercutio, crash the party wearing disguises. Romeo is unsettled by a dream he's had, and Mercutio blames it all on Mab, the queen of illusions.
Mercutio's aria is a baritone showpiece. Delicate violin and flute figures give it a magical flavor as he needles his melancholy friend.
And then Romeo sees Juliet. Mm. We hear a snippet of the love theme before Juliet's nurse, Gertrude, pulls her aside to urge her to marry Paris. Juliet laughs off that idea, launching into her famous aria, Je veux vivre, also called the waltz song.
And she says she wants to enjoy her youth before, quote, the heart surrenders to love and happiness flies forever. You know, while the music is full of breathless abandon, it's a surprisingly gutsy stance for a young woman of that era.
Romeo steals a moment alone with Juliet, not knowing she's a Capulet. Their attraction is obvious, and this duet is flirtatious, yet a little restrained.
Yes, it feels formal, like a minuet. Still, the melodic line builds momentum as if their hearts are racing.
Tybalt interrupts. He's enraged to find Romeo, a Montague, there, and the lovers are horrified to learn each other's identity. Capulet, wanting to avoid a fight, calls for more dancing as the Montagues make their getaway. The second act begins with a gorgeous prelude, and this is the famous balcony scene.
Much of Shakespeare's text is preserved here. Romeo asks what light in yonder window breaks, and in his famous aria, A Levez-toi soleil, he calls for the sun to rise, for Juliet to appear. His ascending phrases perfectly capture his great passion.
The two pledge their hearts and their lives to each other. Juliet is ready to set a wedding date, but they're interrupted as servants pass, and Gertrude calls for Juliet to come inside.
Then, after a brief pause, an elated Cabaletta as the lovers joining in harmony on their famous line, parting is such sweet sorrow, and finally alone on stage, Romeo blows a kiss to Juliet while sensuous love music plays in the orchestra.
The next scene in Friar Lawrence's cell begins with a religious-sounding fugue. He agrees to marry the young couple, hoping to end the feud between the families.
In a trio, Friar Lawrence intones vows that the lovers repeat, and Gertrude's in on the secret wedding, and she joins in a joyful quartet to end the scene.
Yes, a happy ending so far. Mm. And in our production, this is where the intermission falls. And when the curtain goes down just after this wedding, we all kind of go, oh, couldn't we just sort of end things right here?
Indeed.
So, a little bit about Romeo and Juliet. It was a big hit when it premiered at the Théâtre Lyrique in Paris in 1867. It was the same company that had had such success with Gounod's Faust, which they'd premiered about 8 years earlier.
Yes, by the time of Romeo and Juliet, Faust had been performed over 300 times at the Lyrique.
Wow.
Yeah, Gounod teamed up with the same librettist, smart move, Jules Barbier and Michel Carré, and Juliet was the same soprano who created the role of Marguerite in Faust, one Marie-Caroline Carvalho, the wife of the manager of the theater.
Yeah, it's interesting. I can hear similarities between the two roles. They both have lighter waltzy arias early on, Marguerite with her famous Jewel song, and then we have, you know, Juliet with her waltz song. And then they both have more dramatic parts to the roles later in the opera.
Yes, well, Carvalho was known for her ability with coloratura. Gounod created Juliet's waltz song specifically for her because the big act four aria where Juliet takes the potion, well, it was too heavy for her voice, and for years other sopranos omitted the poison aria, which is now considered one of the highlights of the opera.
Interesting. Well, we know the librettist team of Barbier and Carré also from Offenbach's Tales of Hoffmann, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we will hear in order of vocal appearance Bogdan Folkoff in his network broadcast debut as Tybalt, and Bradley Garvin as Paris, and Laurent Nalry as Capulet. Juliet is Eileen Perez and Mercutio Joshua Hopkins. Romeo is Charles Castronovo. Gertrude Maria Zivchak. Gregorio is Zheng Chol Cha, and Friar Lawrence is Quan Chol Yun. Our concertmaster today is Laura Hamilton, and Placido Domingo conducts. Now, our set is a town square in Verona. There's no formal conductor entrance, and we can already see the chorus, the townspeople of Verona, strolling in. When the orchestral prelude starts, Romeo and his friends will wander among them, kind of like a group of teenagers looking for adventure and maybe a little bit of trouble. They're dressed in elegant 18th century garb, but seem slightly sinister. Many of them are in black, those Montagues. Others in a rich, dark red.
Thank you. corso mea, l'uomo e pros, o l'amor che tra le fee a soccor. Il se veierà, se le spera. Regardi, la tua sicurità va sopra.
Lassez le danse pas, de quelque disgrâce fait l'aveu tout bas. Tu restes à sa place et ne danse pas, de quelque disgrâce fait l'aveu tout bas. Au regret extrême dont j'étais moi vieux, je guidais moi-même vos ébats joyeux. Les douces paroles ne me coûtaient rien, que l'âme frivole dont je me souviens.
Terrible, l'ombre, bisogna di sangue e di fer. Lo suo sans avoir l'enfant, vous l'ignorez, c'est Gertrude. Très gracieuse dame, pour les soins qui se fait, je crois qu'on vous réclame.
C'est bien, nous voici.
Oh, grâce de
Oh, Thank you. Thank you. son été fui. Que transport vers moi t'est connu. Que l'amour ressuscite à l'heure.
Tout la nuit est vinaigre, c'est l'amour.
L'amour, encore les dignes rosalines.
Elle l'a prononcé, elle ne le connaît pas.
La voici.
Regarde les favorables.
Friar Lawrence marries Romeo and Juliet in secret, hoping to end the ancient feud between their families. We've heard the first half of Gounod's Romeo and Juliet live from the Metropolitan Opera, starring Eileen Perez and Charles Castronovo, conducted by Plácido Domingo. It's all so happy right there, Ira. I just wanted to stop.
Indeed, yes. Well, we all feel that way, Mary Jo. But this hyper-romantic music, the incredible emotion that you feel, that ravishing aria, crowned by a very lovely diminuendo, by the way, A la Vetoi Soleil, just brings you to a point of such kind of ethereal happiness. It's hard to imagine what's to come.
And these are two very frisky young lovers Indeed. We have in Eileen Perez and Charles Castronovo today. I'm Mary Jo Heath. I'm with commentator Ira Siff. In just a few minutes, we're going to go backstage and speak with Eileen Perez and Charles Castronovo. We'll also have a visit from Peter Gelb, general manager of the Met. It's always great to talk with him on the final broadcast of the season. And we're going to check in with our maestro, Plácido Domingo. Don't go away.
And we'll leave New York there for a minute or two while they have an ad break, which gives us time to bring you this.
Across one night, immerse yourself in a magical nocturnal concert with singers who have flown across continents to be there. A wild and remarkable performance between musicians and songbirds. Nightingales, presented by Verity Sharp. starts tomorrow night at 12:30 and continues through to early Monday morning on BBC Radio 3.
Beautiful. Now, as there's just the one interval tonight, there's no Met quiz, but there are lots of interval features and interviews to enjoy. We'll rejoin the Met for those shortly, and following that, Act 3 of Romeo et Juliet is due to start just before 8:30. It's hard to believe, but this is the final broadcast of the Met Opera season. It will return in the autumn. During the season, Radio 3 has been recording at the British Opera Houses. Some highlights coming up include Shostakovich's Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk from the Royal Opera House, starring soprano Ava Maria Westbrook and tenor Brandon Jovanovich. You can hear that on the 19th of May. Also coming up at the Opera House is a new opera by George Benjamin called Lessons in Love and Violence. That's conducted by Benjamin himself and has a cast including Stéphane Degout and Barbara Hannigan. And you can hear it here on Radio 3 on the 2nd of June. Now it's time to rejoin the Met to delve into its history.
And now we bring you a golden moment from Met history. We're celebrating the 100th anniversary of the birth of the phenomenal Swedish soprano Birgit Nilsson. Her 1959 Met debut as Isolde in Wagner's Tristan und Isolde is the stuff of legend, creating such a sensation that it made front page news. After the first act alone, pandemonium erupted in the audience, forcing general manager Rudolf Bing to break his own house rule by allowing her a solo bow. Here she is in a broadcast from the following season, singing a bit of Isolde's narrative and curse. Soprano Birgit Nilsson in Isolde's Narrative and Curse from a 1961 performance of Wagner's Tristan und Isolde, one of the many historic broadcasts you can hear at Met Opera on Demand. Over the next couple of decades, Nilsson continued to thrill Met audiences in more than 200 unforgettable performances. We've been listening to a golden moment from the Met. We are live at the Metropolitan Opera with Gounod's Romeo et Juliet, and we're going to go backstage now where Lauren Toulagian is speaking with our Romeo and Juliet.
Thank you very much, Mary Jo, and hello to our gorgeous lovers, Eileen Perez and Charles Castronovo, and hello. Happy Cinco de Mayo, friends.
Yeah, thank you.
Viva.
Viva
Mexico.
Exactly. Viva. What a beautiful wedding ceremony. We just heard it was so romantic, held in secret after Romeo and Juliet's whirlwind courtship. Can you newlyweds tell us, what is it about each other that made you fall so deeply and passionately in love?
Well, for me, it's all about these cheekbones. Look how beautiful
Charlie,
they are.
Oh, Charlie, and his peaceful eyes, and the warmth and the generosity he is on stage. He's just magical. He's really, our chemistry is pretty easy.
Yeah, actually, we've got the Latin blood thing going, and it just kind of works. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. When you believe it, it just heightens everything. And when we see the two of you, we just believe
it. Thank you. And this production, you know, with Bart's production and Gina directing, we're the characters really are taking the courageous steps, and we're re-highlighting, you know, all of the points that are a surprise for that time as well. You know, to get married and to even think that this could be a peaceful, you know, union of two warring families.
Right. So let me ask you about that. How hard is it to push away what's to come as Eileen and Charles playing these characters. How hard or easy is it to push that away?
Yeah, I know for me, I mean, when I look at a character like Romeo or even Juliet, they're so honest, you know, in their youthfulness, in their feelings. So for me, if, as long as you play it very honest, you're immediately in the moment and mm-hmm. you don't have to worry about anything before. I mean, in the very first scene when we all come out, maybe there's a little sense of foreboding. But I think in general, when you play it extremely honest, you can only be in the moment. And the music helps that perfectly. So
that's brilliant. Yeah, that's true.
Eileen, your first aria, Juliet's Waltz, was very light. And full of vocal fireworks.
Yes.
Then your role becomes much more dramatic, as we'll soon hear. So what kind of challenge is that for you?
I think I try to marry all of these moments, like when we have the sounds of destiny and love. And in Juliet, you have a descending chromatic scale, and that mm-hmm. happens again in the Poison aria. So to me, it's marrying this journey that she's on musically, as well as the character vocally. And staying in the moment, like Charlie said. Yeah.
Charles, Romeo's music is ultra-romantic. How do you sustain all that passion through not one, not two, but four love duets?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Actually, especially in this production, because there's only one intermission. So you really have long runs, you know, in the first half and then all of the second half. But I think it's more about, you know, if you're in the character, if you're into the feeling of what's going on, you try to forget about, you know, how difficult it is vocally and, you know, for energy and strength. But I think in general, if you stay true to what's happening with your partner and what's happening on stage, then you find the focus for that.
Yeah, it's the only place you
in
can
truth,
be.
You know, we're only in harmony twice, in the Sois Bénies right. when yes. we're married, and also the Nuit d'Imenea, which yes. is upcoming, which is the wedding yeah. being in the bedroom.
Yeah,
the bedroom
first
scene.
Night, yeah.
So and the rest is repartee. Yeah. So.
Right. So in just our last 30 seconds, if you could change one thing to prevent the ending from actually being what the ending is, what would you change?
Oh, no way. I wouldn't change a thing. This is the most radical.
You mean if we really had to save it, you mean?
Yeah, if you could save it.
I would just throw her over my shoulder and take her that same night and just get out of town.
Oh,
I think.
Yeah,
can you
that's
imagine?
Right. Why get
yeah,
married?
Yeah, forget
why
about it.
Let's just run away.
We'll do it later.
Oh, yeah.
hit the road, Jack.
Right. Yeah, totally. You know, the next town, no one knows where you are. It's, you know, in the old days,
start
I suppose.
All over.
Yeah. Exactly. When he's exiled, I thought, okay, well, maybe he'll go to the next town. I'm sure we can see each other, right? Anyway.
Well, thank you so much, Eileen Pérez and Charles Castronova. Great talking with you.
Thank you so
we're
much.
We're live backstage at the Met. Mary Jo, back to you and your special guest in the radio booth. While I look for Placido Domingo.
Thanks, Lauren. Well, yes, as has become our tradition on our final broadcast of the season, I'm joined in the radio booth by the general manager of the Met, Peter Gelb. Peter, it's been quite a season, so I'm glad we have this chance to chat as things are coming to a close. I never say winding down because it seems like it just goes full blast into a wall and then we're done, doesn't it?
Well, actually, Mary Jo, in terms of my work, I don't think it ever winds down.
No, because, that's for sure for you, it doesn't.
We're yeah. always thinking ahead and moving forward. But, I was in the house listening to the performance of Eileen and Charlie, and they're hearing such wonderful artists singing this so beautifully, and it's really a treat. And it's a great, I think this is a great way to end the radio broadcast season with this great performance.
Yes, well, and as we have, like, 8.5 performances left at this point. Are you ever able to sit back and enjoy? You said you've been in the house like a civilian, or are you always thinking of other things?
Well, no, I'm always thinking of other things. In fact, in the middle of their duet, at one point, I got on the phone and made sure the foul spots were balanced more correctly. it's hard for me to ever be a civilian, but that doesn't mean that I don't enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I love hearing the great artists of the Met on our stage, and this has been a great season. One we're all very proud of. We've had so many wonderful performances, so many great artists. It's hard to, you know, I always sort of live in the moment in terms of what's happening on the stage and thinking ahead. I don't like, you know, I don't really have time to think back. But if you were to ask me to think, to sit back and think back about what took place this season, I don't know where I'd begin. I mean, there have been so many, you know, extraordinary events, artistic events, from Yannick Nézet-Séguin's leading those brilliant performances of Electra and Parsifal, mm-hmm. The Exterminating Angel premiere, this recent wonderful run of performances of Louisa Miller, Sonia Yancheva's taking on three different roles, and Eileen as well. It's really just been sort of one highlight after another. Certainly... And now, unfortunately, the radio audiences didn't hear it around the world, but Anna Netrebko's debut in the role of Tosca, which has just been taking place over the last week and ends the season, which has been mesmerizing our audiences, and I know she will come back and sing Tosca again on the stage of the Met, and next time we'll be sure to broadcast that.
Well, hearing it from you may make sure that it's going to happen. That's for sure, then. That's good. Well, you visited the radio booth a few months ago to tell us about the coming season and about the four new productions that are coming up. Samson and Delilah, the U.S. premiere of Nico Muhly's Marnie, a Met commission, Verdi's La Traviata, and Chilea's Adriana Lecouvreur. And I've seen peaks at the sets because they've started those technical rehearsals already. So what other kind of preparations are going on?
Well, this currently we're teching the new production of Traviata, mm-hmm. Which is spectacular, I think. It's set in this very ornate and beautiful 18th century room where the room doesn't change, but the interior decoration of it does with each season. It begins... the prelude of Traviata begins in winter, and the whole opera storytelling really is a flashback, I guess you could say, of Violetta on her deathbed. And then the scenery transforms itself into spring, summer, winter, and fall,
oh, wow.
And then back to winter. It's very beautiful. And, you know, it's interesting to see the quality of and the imagination of some of our directors and designers and you know, who are very celebrated. The Tony Awards were, you know, the Theater Awards in New York were just announced, the nominations, I should say, and at least 8 or 9 of the nominees are regularly work at the Met, including the lighting designer of this new production of Traviata, Kevin Adams, and the set designer, Christine Jones, who just designed the set for the most acclaimed new Broadway event of which is the new Harry Potter two-part play.
Oh, yeah.
So we have some of Broadway's greatest talents working on the stage of the Met, and they do wonderful work here as well.
So what can you tell us a little bit about Adriana? Because it looks quite special, too, I noticed.
Well, Adriana, this production of David McVicker's, which consists of a giant sort of theatrical set within the stage, so it's mm-hmm. a theater within a theater, and it's a great vehicle for Anna Netrebko and Piotr Bechawa, and that we were teching the week before last, and that also I think is going to be terrific. That's a production that has played elsewhere. The Traviata is brand new for the Met, but any David McVicker production is a treat for our audiences. He had great success this year with his new productions of Tosca and Norma as well.
I should tell our listeners that one of the fun things about working here is that over the summer they tech all these shows on stage, so we get a little sneak peek at what the sets look like. That's very fun.
Right, and that's why my work doesn't end at the end of the season.
That's right. So next season is going to be our 13th live in HD season. It's amazing it's gone by that quickly. There will be 10 operas in that series as well. I know a lot of our listeners like to sneak off on a Saturday from their radio and go to a movie theater. So what can you tell us about a couple of those?
Well, we hope our listeners listen and also watch. So, you know, we're delighted whether they're listening at home or in a cinema. We've recently, the series of HD transmissions into movie theaters has been very successful, as you know, and I think we recently sold our 25th million tickets since we began the series.
Wow.
It parallels our season in the sense, a new season. It begins actually not with the first new production of the season that opens the season of Samson and Dalila. That's the second HD transmission. The mm-hmm. first one is Anna Netrebko making her Metropolitan Opera role debut as Aida, which is going to be a much anticipated and spectacular event, at least based upon what I heard when I heard her sing Aida for the first time in Salzburg last summer. And she was born to sing Aida, as she was born to sing Tosca and all the other roles that she sings. So it's a season that includes those two operas. It includes our new production of Marnie by Nico Muhly, which mm-hmm. we've already started preparing for. The chorus is rehearsing it now and in the final weeks of this season mm-hmm. To get ready for next year. It's a marvelous new opera that is inspired by the book that inspired the Hitchcock psychological thrillers, and stars Isabel Leonard in the title role of a woman who robs her employers and ultimately gets caught while she changes identity, and she has a deep and mysterious past that comes back to haunt her.
Mm-hmm. And Fanchula del West and Carmen and Fille de Regiment, things like that.
Right, well, and Fanchula is, we hope, will be the return finally of Jonas Kaufmann, who the tenor that seems to have gotten away from the Met over recent years, but who we keep wooing to come back. And he's promised me that he'll be here. He has a contract for four performances of Fanchula, including the radio broadcast and the HD transmission.
Okay, well, in our last 30 seconds, anything else you want to add?
No, just, well, I would just add in the final 30 seconds that we love doing what we do from the stage of the Met. We're so grateful to our audiences. They come to the Opera House and listen to us on the radio. We love staying connected with them via the airwaves, whether they're listening in on the radio or in the movie theaters. And most of all, we'd love to have you all here at the Met.
Thank you, Peter. It's good to see you. Have a good summer as you tech things, and I know you do a lot of traveling looking for new productions and artists, etc., too.
We're always looking for new talent, new productions, new artists to present on our stage. Thanks so much, Mary Jo.
I've been speaking with Peter Gelb, the Met's general manager, here on our last broadcast of the season. And now I think we're ready to go backstage one more time to Lauren Toulagian, who is with Placido Domingo.
Thanks again, Mary Jo. Maestro, so good to visit with you again. Good to see you.
Thank you, my pleasure.
I was interested to learn that Romeo and Juliet was only the second opera you led at the Met after La Boheme, once you began conducting here. So I'm wondering about the attraction to this opera. What is it about it that you love so much?
Well, I think it's one of the most beautiful operas that they are related with two characters that everybody knows, you know? So this makes the opera tremendously popular. And Gounod, better known from the Faust, and that the Romeo and Juliet, I think that Romeo and Juliet is little by little and in big steps now, is being even more popular than the Faust. It's, mm-hmm. is played, if you see any company around the world, any in the United States, internationally, everybody's doing Romeo and Juliet. Just by the way, I have been singing in China every year, mm-hmm. and guess what is the next opera that they are preparing?
Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah. I think it's a fascinating opera. Many critics, they say that it was written as advanced or enough music than he wrote for Faust. I even like it more, Romeo, than Faust. I mean, with all respect for the Faust. I think it's extraordinary, dramatically, vocally, and the music is...
Well, there are certainly gorgeous melodies for the orchestra as well as the singers. Yeah. Do you have a favorite moment for the orchestra?
Well, what can I tell you? It's a completely rhapsody, you know, so that with the singers, you know, some of the duets. I mean, it's an eternal duet between both
exactly.
characters. And in this cast in special, I'm so proud because I have four singers and they start really with me. Charlie Casanova was the young artist in Los Angeles, and Eileen Perez, Quantful Young, and Bogdan Volkov, they have been winners of my competition, Operalia. So I'm so proud to be doing these performances at the Met. And yes, indeed, Romeo is the opera that I have conducted more times at the Met.
So let me ask you this. You have sung this role, Romeo, here at the Met. Mm-hmm. So you have that experience. What insight has that given you when you now come back to conduct it in terms of supporting the singers as someone who's performed the role of Romeo?
Well, I really like to always support the singers, but especially Romeo is one of the most difficult operas for the tenor. I tell you, this is it's long the role. It has all the difficulties than you can expect it in an opera. So I really pending of the lips of my singers, you know, because I really like to accompany them and make a beautiful cushion with the orchestra.
Next season will be your 50th anniversary at the Met. 50,
right.
Maestro.
Yeah.
And you'll be back singing Puccini's Gianni Schicchi. Tell us about that character in our last 30
well,
seconds.
Well, it's a new role than I did it when we did a triptych in Los Angeles, and Woody Allen did a very personal production of Janis Kiki, and I did it, you know. So I'm doing that, and I'm singing Traviatas also and conducting Sonaidas for my anniversary, you know.
We can't wait. It's always good to see you. Thank you for a few minutes.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
We have a second part. Beautiful.
Maestro Placido Domingo. I'm Lauren Toulage, and we are live backstage at the Met. Mary Jo and Ira, thanks for another wonderful season together. Have a great summer, and for now, back to you in the radio booth.
Thank you, Lauren, and to you, too.
Yes, thank you, Lauren.
Ira, we had kind of a special moment up here earlier this week. The great Italian mezzo Fiorenza Casotto was in town for the Opera News Awards. She came up to do an interview with us, which was delightful and was mostly in Italian. And as we were leaving, who comes down the hallway but Placido Domingo?
That's astonishing. I met her at the Opera News Awards when she was, that's why she was here.
Uh-huh.
She was honored in the Opera News Awards, and they played her judgment scene from Aida, the video of that, and mm-hmm. it was just, talk about goosebumps. And it brings back, when they're together, it brings back a whole generational feel about the kind of singing that they gave us during their careers. It was just sensational.
Yeah, really. And it's amazing to think that he has celebrating his 50th anniversary at the Met that we're going to do in a special way, as he mentioned, next season. He made his house debut in Adriana Le Couvreur on September the 28th, 1968. His debut on our podium was leading La Boheme in October of 1984.
And once again, we'll leave New York there for a moment for their advertising break, which just gives me time to remind you that as well as the regular Saturday evening slot, you can also hear wonderful opera and choral music from around the globe in Afternoon Concert's Thursday Opera Matinee. This coming week, Jonathan Swain presents a Vespers service compiled from music by Monteverdi and Gabrielli, recorded at last year's Zurich Early Music Festival. Early music specialist Andrea Marcon leads the renowned La Cetra Baroque Orchestra and Vocal Ensemble. His selection includes Monteverdi's second Dixit Dominus for 8 voices, his first Beatus Vir for 6 voices, and the first Magnificat for 8 voices. Join Jonathan for that next Thursday at 2 o'clock. Now it's time to head back to New York for a sneak preview of next season's Met Opera broadcasts.
Here's a preview of next season's Saturday matinee broadcasts live from the stage of the Metropolitan Opera. Our 88th season on the air features a grand array of favorites and surprises. We'll bring you all the excitement of 4 new productions. The network broadcast premiere of Marnie, a new opera by Nico Muhly. Saint-Saëns et Dalila by Saint-Saëns. Chilea's Adriana Le Couvreur, starring Anna Netrebko and Piotr Buchawa. And Verdi's La Traviata, conducted by Met music director Yannick Nezet-Séguin, with Juan Diego Flores and Diana Damrau. Maestro Nezet-Séguin will also lead 2 mesmerizing French operas, Debussy's Pelléas et Mélisande and Poulenc's Dialogues of the Carmelites. You'll hear 2 Puccini works that received their historic world premieres at the Met, La Fanciulla del West, starring Ava Maria Westbrook and Jonas Kaufmann, and celebrating its centenary, the stunning triple bill Il Trittico. We'll welcome some great operas back to the repertory, like Tchaikovsky's Iolanta, Bartók's Bluebeard's Castle, Mozart's La Clemenza di Tito, and Boito's Mephistophele. And of course, we'll have the classics such as Carmen, Don Giovanni, Tosca, and La Fille de Regiment, starring Pretty Yende and Javier Camarena. And don't miss the complete cycle of Wagner's towering Der Ring des Nibelungen, all 4 operas, broadcast in the spring. 24 extraordinary performances from December to May. The 2018-19 season of Saturday Matinee broadcasts live from the Met. We are live at the Met, where we're listening to Romeo et Juliette by Charles Gounod, with a libretto by Jules Barbier and Michel Carré, based on the play by William Shakespeare. The production is by Bartlett Shear, with sets by Michael Juergen, costumes by Catherine Zuber, and lighting by Jennifer Tipton. The choreographer is Chase Brock, and the fight director is B.H. Berry. The revival stage director is Gina Lipinski. The production was a gift of the Sybil B. Harrington Endowment Fund. The revival was made possible by Rolex. This is a La Scala production initially presented by the Salzburg Festival. The chorus master is Donald Palumbo, with musical preparation by Donna Ratchik, Denise Massé, Derek Inouye, Joseph Lawson, and Brian Waghorn. The assistant stage director is Jonathan Loy. The prompter is Donna Ratchik, and the stage manager is Gary Dietrich. I'm Mary Jo Heath, here with commentator Ira Siff, and the second half of the opera will begin soon. In the previous scene, the lovers were married by Friar Lawrence, raising hopes their families might be reconciled. But everything changes in the very next scene.
Yes, and thanks to a character created not by Shakespeare, but by Gounod and his librettist, Stefano, Romeo's page boy. Now, this is a trouser role for mezzo. He taunts the Capulets with a song about a turtle dove, one who will escape a nest of vultures to join her love. Well, it's a sprightly tune, but with a very provocative message.
And it enrages the Capulets. A fight breaks out, and Romeo tries to calm things, but Tybalt calls him a coward. So Mercutio steps in, and Tybalt stabs him, killing him. And now Romeo, blinded by anger and grief, kills Tybalt.
And everyone is stunned. In a mournful ensemble, both Capulets and Montagues lament this day of tears.
When the Duke of Verona arrives on the scene, the people cry out for justice. He holds both sides responsible for the bloodshed, so instead of sentencing Romeo to death, he punishes him with exile.
Romeo begins the finale to this act with an insistent melody expressing horror at the violence and despair at having to leave.
He secretly vows to see Juliet again, while the Capulets and Montagues declare there will never be peace. After this, there will be a brief pause, and the next act will begin with Romeo and Juliet having just spent their wedding night together.
And we hear an exquisitely sensuous melody played by four cellos. It unfolds into the love theme in the full orchestra.
Juliet has forgiven Romeo because if Tybalt had not died, Romeo would have lost his own life. Then the lovers begin their third and most famous duet.
Their close harmony suggests the closeness of their union as they sing of this rapturous night. But Romeo is distracted by the sound of a lark, and that signals the break of day, and we hear it played on a solo flute.
At first, Juliet says it's not a lark, but a nightingale, and she begs Romeo to stay before remembering the danger he's facing. And then it's Romeo who's reluctant to leave.
But Juliet insists he flee. Their voices soar together in an urgent melody filled with sadness and regret.
Romeo finally tears himself away, and almost immediately Juliet's father arrives with a pressing demand. She must honor Tybalt's dying wish and marry Paris. The wedding will be today. When she and Friar Lawrence are alone, Juliet begs for his help. She is willing to die rather than marry Paris. So he proposes a plan. He gives her a sleeping potion to drink, one that will make it appear as if she's dead.
In a hypnotic-sounding passage, the friar describes how it will stop the blood flowing in her veins, but he promises that when she wakes up, she'll find her husband waiting with open arms.
Juliet is left alone to contemplate the risks. Will the potion work? What if she wakes up in the tomb next to the dead Tybalt, and this is her famous poison aria?
It's a real tour de force for the soprano. It's a heroic melody with trills on high A's, ascents to high C. Then Juliet pours out her doubts and her fears in a recitative-like middle section, Finally, she resumes the melody, more determined than ever.
Declaring, "O Romeo, I drink to you," she downs the potion. Ooh, it's a thrilling end to the scene. Next, we're at Juliet's wedding to Paris. But before she makes it to the altar, Juliet collapses, saying the grave will be her wedding bed. Following an orchestral prelude, the final act takes place in the Capulet family crypt. Romeo arrives. He never received any word of Friar Lawrence's plan, and he believes that Juliet is dead.
And he marvels that she should still look so beautiful. His magnificent music reaches heights of anguish, but then joy as he looks forward to joining her.
He drinks from a flask of poison, and just then, Juliet wakes up.
And here the libretto departs from Shakespeare. The fact that Romeo is still alive when Juliet awakes allows us to hear one final blissful duet, their voices joined together, rejoicing at their reunion.
But Romeo's poison takes effect quickly, and he explains to Juliet what he's done. He tries to console his wife, saying their love will survive death.
And we hear musical themes return from their earlier duets, and it's just heartbreaking.
Juliet takes Romeo's dagger and stabs herself, and the two lovers beg for God's forgiveness as they die together. Just like it always ends, and just like you hope it never will this time. We will hear, in order of vocal appearance, Corinda A. as Stefano, Jung Chol Cha as Gregorio, Joshua Hopkins as Mercutio, and Bogdan Volkov as Tybalt. Charles Castronovo is Romeo, Tony Stevenson is Benvolio, Bradley Garvin, Paris, Laurent Nauri Capulet, and Kevin Short is the Duke of Verona. Placido Domingo conducts the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and Chorus. We're about to hear part two. We're going to hear act three, scene two, and then there'll be a little quick pause before the rest of it. Looks like the audience is getting settled in. And here comes Maestro Placido Domingo. Here he is on the podium, asking the orchestra to rise. So let's hear Gounod's Romeo et Juliet.
Thank you. Ci sia la tremesa, se tua ti va a porte la pena. Hermosa luna,
After killing Tybalt, Romeo is ordered to leave Verona in exile. But he vows to see Juliet again, even if it costs him his life. We just heard the conclusion of Act 3 of Gounod's Romeo et Juliet live from the Met. And in a moment, we'll hear the final two acts, beginning when the two lovers have just spent their wedding night together. In order of vocal appearance, we'll hear Eileen Perez as Juliet and Charles Castronovo as Romeo. Maria Zivchak is Gertrude, Laurent Nauri is Capulet, Quan Chol-Yun is Friar Lawrence. Placido Domingo conducts the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and Chorus. Now, during the previous scene, a long swath of white cloth billowed down from above, and now it will be spread across the stage to represent Romeo and Juliet's wedding bed. This scene and this duet are full of very complex feelings. The two are still deeply in love, but there is a bit of a sense of sadness over the deaths of Tybalt and Mercutio that took place in the previous scene.
Thank you. Sir. Thank you. La prese jour votre cor et votre âme comme les foyers sur la mine la flamme sorti l'autre fin de ce lourd sommeil par l'ombre brûlée
Il mio amore, il mio amore, Thank you. Oh! Oh,
Romeo and Juliet have taken their own lives and are now together in death. That was the conclusion of Gounod's Romeo and Juliet in this performance coming to you live from the stage of the Metropolitan Opera House here in New York City. And we're watching very slowly as Plácido Domingo leaves the podium and is chatting with members of his orchestra. Clearly kind of moved himself by this whole story one more time. And now our curtain is going up, and here center stage are our lovers, Romeo and Juliet, Eileen Pérez and Charles Castronovo, arm in arm, and now holding their hands aloft. He's kissing her hand, bowing to the audience. Big hug between the two of them. Blowing kisses to each other as they leave opposite sides of the stage. And now here is Jung Chul Cha, who was Gregorio, and Tony Stevenson, Benvolio, taking a bow together. Kevin Short, our Duke of Verona. And Bradley Garvin, who is Count Paris, poor old hapless Count Paris. Bradley Garvin is also singing the King in Cendrillon these days as well. Here's Maria Zivchak, Gertrude. She was Suzuki for us earlier this season, mezzo-soprano. This is her 40th role at the Met, Ira. Here's Bogdan Folkov, Tybalt, Ukrainian tenor. This is his Met debut role and season. Here's Corinne de A, French mezzo, or Stefano. We heard her a few seasons ago as Isolier in Comte d'Orie and Niklaus in Tales of Hoffmann. Here's Laurent Nauri, our Capulet, bass baritone from Paris. He's also the dad, Pandolf, in Cendrillon these days as well. Kwang Chul-yeon, South Korean bass, our Friar Lawrence. Joshua Hopkins, Mercutio, baritone from Canada. He's going to be in our Met Parks concerts this summer. Shaking hands with his fellow cast members. Here is Charles Castronovo from one side and Eileen Pérez from the other. Stepping forward. Deep bow for both of them. Charles Castronovo, tenor, born in New York, raised in LA. He was a member of our Lindemann Young Artist Program about 20 years ago. He made his debut as Beppe in Pagliacci, and guess who was Canio that night, Ira?
Could it be Plácido Domingo?
Yes, it could be. And that applause is for Eileen Pérez, soprano from Chicago. Big season for her at the Met this year. She was our Thais. She was the Countess in The Marriage of Figaro, and now she's Juliet. And next season, she'll be back as Mimi in La Boheme and as Alice Ford in Falstaff. And
it's going to be fun.
She could be very funny. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. And now Eileen Pérez steps off to greet our maestro. Here comes Plácido Domingo. Acknowledging his cast and his orchestra and asking them to rise. He just finished singing Louisa Miller, as you probably heard a few Saturdays ago. And next season, we're going to be celebrating his 50th anniversary at the Met. He'll be singing Donny Skiki and Germont and conducting Aida. Woof, that's busy.
I think busy is his middle name.
I think busy. He's going to be, his summer plans, his vacation is Germont in Vienna, Macbeth in Berlin, and conducting Valkyrie in Bayreuth. So that's Plácido's summer vacation. And now our whole cast is bowing together one more time. Here they come. Juliet in the middle, and Plácido Domingo right there next to her, and Charles, here's a bow for Maria Zivchak, for Bogdan Folkov, our Tybalt, Corinda A, Stefano, Laurent Nauri, Capulet, deep bow from him, Kwang Chul-yeon, Friar Lawrence, Joshua Hopkins, Mercutio, Charles Castronovo, and Eileen Pérez. And Plácido Domingo. The music producer for this Metropolitan Opera broadcast is J. David Saxon. The operations director is John Kurzweil. Ed Hartley and Robert Hewitt are the broadcast engineers. Cast bow one more time, gang. Since this is our final broadcast of the season, we would like to thank the people who make these broadcasts possible throughout the year. Big wave from the cast as the curtain goes down. Transmission consultant Mark Shubin, and from the Met Electric Department, Philip Volpe, Josh Marks, Rob Gorton, Kevin Cavanaugh, George Green, Jenny Shear Montgomery, John Montgomery, Chris Snook, Arthur Oliner, Susan Ash, Catherine Martis, Fred Teets, Jason Crystal, Dave Bullard, Philip Zumo, Brian Jules, Chris Vandry, and Max Ardito. And a special thanks to our wonderful broadcast ambassador, Deborah Voigt, for everything she's done to support our broadcasts. Our senior radio producer and editor is Ellen Keel. The show producer is John Bischoff. The producer is William Berger, and the associate producer is Lee Ellen Vim. We had and always have production assistance from Yolanda Williams, Michael Griebel, and Geza Kudlock. The broadcast stage manager is Laurie Squire. The executive producers are Mia Bongiovanni and Elena Park. And folks, this is the best gang in radio.
What a team.
The Metropolitan Opera's music director designate is Yannick Nezet-Séguin, and the general manager is Peter Gelb.
And of course, thank you to our American colleagues, Mary Jo Heath and Ira Siff. The Metropolitan Opera broadcast season is supported by Toll Brothers, the Annenberg Foundation, the Neubauer Family Foundation, and the Vincent A. Stabile Endowment for Broadcast Media, and broadcast here through an arrangement with the European Broadcasting Union. Good evening, this is BBC Radio 3. I'm Chris Barrow. At 10 o'clock, it's Here and Now with Robert Warby, where he'll introduce a major new work by Richard Barrett, so stay tuned for that. Before that, though, we have a few minutes in hand, just enough time for Bach's Gigue in C minor from his Suite for Cello Solo No. 5, performed by Yo-Yo Ma. Yo-Yo Ma with Bach's Gigue in C minor from his Suite for Cello Solo No. 5.
On BBC Radio 4.
This is The Untold.
I'm offering change to the broken system. Hooray! And to move women and girls up the political agenda.
Unheard voices.
He rang me and his voice was kind of cracking with emotion.
Stories of modern Britain.
Obviously, it was the worst moment in my life.
Beginning with the youngest ever competitor at the Commonwealth Games.
If you're playing a lot, you don't think, should I do this sport? You just do it.
The new series of The Untold, presented by Grace Dent, on Monday morning at 11 on BBC Radio 4.
And this is BBC Radio 3. I'm Chris Barrow. Later at midnight, it's Geoffrey Smith's Jazz, and he's featuring the music of Stan Getz, who became famous around the world for his bossa novas. But the focus tonight is on his final recordings, the ones that he made not long before his death in 1991. It includes sessions with the pianist Kenny Barron and the singer Abby Lincoln. Don't miss it. That's just after midnight. But next on BBC Radio 3, it's Here and Now, bringing you the best in contemporary music. Tonight, Robert Warby reviews new CDs and introduces a major new work by Richard Barrett. Hello! The main focus of tonight's programme is a large-scale work, a suite of pieces in fact, by Richard Barrett, performed by the Belgrade-based collective Ensemble Studio 6, along with the composer. Here and Now especially recorded this concert at the Audiograph Festival in Oxford in March. All of that is coming up in about 40 minutes or so. And so we have time to bring you news of recent CD releases. And I'm pleased to say that joining me in the studio to chat about these is composer, performer and new music protagonist, Neil Luck. Neil, welcome to Here and Now.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What's the first piece you've chosen?
So the first piece I've chosen is from a new album by Lucy Railton. And the album's called Paradise 94 that's out on Modern Love at the minute. And it's a track called Critical Rush. It's a really fascinating album. Lucy, I mean, listeners might be aware of Lucy. She's a pretty well-known person in the new music and experimental music world.
She's one of the founders of the London Contemporary Music Festival, isn't she?
She's one of the founders of, yep, the London Contemporary Music Festival. She's the founder of the Kammerklang concert series in London. And she's also, she's probably best known, actually, for being a cellist, perhaps.
Yeah, indeed.
She's, yeah, a wonderful cellist. And she's also a composer. She makes her own music. And this album is kind of surprising, actually, given her breadth of activity, that this is her debut album.